I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We are about to have a conversation with Governor Chet Culver. Chet Culver was governor of Iowa from 2007 to 2011, and actually is somewhat of a homeboy. He spent some time here in high school in Montgomery County. He's here for the environmental conference taking place downtown, which we'll talk about, and also with his company that is deeply involved in alternative energy, especially wind, which is one of the big issues we'll be talking about here in the state of Maryland. And Chet Culver, welcome to Baltimore, Maryland, and welcome to the studio.
It's great to be back in the area, and thanks, Mark, for having me on. I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
It's really good to meet you. So talk a bit about what your experience was first as governor of Iowa. You were the 40th governor of Iowa.
I was, and it was a great experience. I really enjoyed the privilege of serving the people of Iowa's governor. Prior to that, I was Secretary of State for 8 years, so I was elected three times statewide. And
it's an elected position in Iowa.
It is. Uh-huh. So feel very fortunate that I had 12 good years in public service. 2010 was a tough year for some Democrats, including me. So I'm now transitioning back into the private sector, but really enjoying what I'm doing. As governor, I really fought for wind energy in particular in Iowa, and we made great strides. And I just saw the benefits of wind energy and tried to do all I could as governor of Iowa to help our state become a national leader. And in fact, we have. And now I'm continuing with the Chet Culver Group, working in many different areas in the renewable energy space, including transmission, which is
huge issue.
Of the things we're talking huge about issue. Today with the Atlantic Wind Connection, but also working with wind turbine manufacturers, blade companies, doing energy efficiency, working with a company out of Hastings, Nebraska that's retrofitting old homes and saving a lot of money for those folks living in those homes, and just really having fun. And now I have a little more time to coach my son's football team and help my daughter's swim team as well. So
that's good.
Life is good, and it's great to be back in Baltimore.
Fatherhood's an important part of any of our lives, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So did I read correctly about Iowa under your tenure that 20% of the energy was renewable? Talk about that. You went from 5% to 20% in 4 years, which is a huge – what is
it? Yeah, we made really quick gains. And, I was lucky. My predecessor, Tom Vilsack, who's now the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, he really got the ball rolling. He was governor for 8 years. And then we, took on a similar mission in terms of really building and implementing wind energy. And that can be very challenging, as I'm sure you know. But what we did effectively is we aligned the public policies necessary at the state and local level with the opportunities. So, for example, siting can be very challenging. It can take
siting
of wind farms.
Wind farms, right?
Permitting and siting. Can really slow down the process if you want to generate renewable energy, whether it's solar or wind. Sometimes that can be a huge hurdle. We kind of cut through that. We focused on a lot of reforms to make it a little more practical and easier to site these farms, and that sped up the process. So we basically, in about a five-year period, we went from 5% renewable energy to 20%. So we're generating in Iowa today just about 4,000 megawatts.
From wind.
From wind, which is roughly 3,500 turbines, 1 megawatt or larger. We have a fair number of 1.5 megawatt turbines spinning. And we've built 40 wind farms, and we're now actually the national leader, right, in the United States. Iowa's leading the way in terms of wind generation and manufacturing of the component parts. You're making the towers, turbines, and blades in manufacturing factories across the state and creating some really good jobs.
What were those factories before they were doing that?
Well, it's interesting. One perfect case or example is in Newton, Iowa, where Maytag was making washers and dryers.
Right.
Unfortunately, those jobs were shipped overseas. That plant shut down. And fortunately for us, because of our commitment, we brought two wind energy companies into that same town, Newton, Iowa. They're actually using some of the old Maytag factories, and we're creating hundreds of really good paying jobs. TPI is a blade manufacturer. They're making blades in Newton, and Trinity is making wind towers there. And so we've—
What's the difference between a wind tower and a wind—
Well, you've got three parts, basically. You have a turbine, you've got the blade, and then you have the tower.
And each three, those are separate manufacturing procedures.
Absolutely, yep. And which is exciting because, you know, there's so many benefits really from, you know, a state like Maryland or like Iowa really making a commitment. Because not only do you have to make those component parts, those towers and those turbines and blades, but in the supply chain, you have entrepreneurs and innovators and small businesses. In our case in Iowa, 200 of them, 200 separate small businesses all across the state of Iowa that are now supplying smaller parts to those larger manufacturing facilities. So it's just been, had a huge economic impact.
So so the 20% of renewable energy of Iowa's energy is renewable, almost all that is wind?
Correct.
Right? And so how many – I'm curious how many jobs it's created. What kind of – how many people are now at work because of wind energy, that system?
Well, there's a lot of different jobs. The manufacturing jobs, we actually have 8 wind energy companies. So we have Siemens is there making turbines. We have the other companies that I've mentioned. We have Clipper making turbines in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So these 8 companies are spread out across our state. They collectively employ, as many as 5,000 people, really good paying jobs in those plants, in those large manufacturing plants. But then you've got those 200 companies in the supply chain, and certainly that's thousands of additional jobs. You have all of the construction jobs, the transportation jobs, those trucks that have to move the parts. The construction jobs that are created to build the farms. And so you're literally talking about thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of investment. So when you build a wind farm, you're talking about a $50 to a $250 million investment just to build one farm.
Just to build one farm?
Sure.
And how many farms do you have?
We have 40.
And where did that money come from?
Well, it's been a terrific public-private partnership. And, you know, given these tight budgets across America and around the world that governments are dealing with, I think one way we can continue to take care of our constituents' needs is to create public-private opportunities. So in our case, we partnered with some of the utility companies, some of the rural electric cooperatives, some of those energy companies, large and small, and we work together to build a lot of these farms. So a lot of private sector investment, but my job as governor was to make sure that those ratepayers, those customers, my constituents, got a good deal too. And one of the things we've been able to do for our ratepayers in Iowa is keep our rates as low as about any state in America because we've generated more power. So if you have more power, in fact, we've become a net exporter of energy in Iowa. And that's allowed us to keep our prices relatively low for our customers.
So what are you doing here at the Maryland Clean Energy Summit? I mean, so you're here to talk about the Iowa experience or something?
Absolutely. I've been going around the country for 5 or 6 years now, and also to Europe to learn as much as I can about wind energy and renewable energy, to talk to leaders and policymakers. And I really benefited from that experience. Most of that was when I was governor, and we put a lot of policies in place to allow Iowa to become this national leader. I'd like to help other states do that. That's what one of the things I'm doing now in the private sector. So I'm working on this Atlantic Wind Connection project, working with that group to do what we can to help other states, including Maryland, develop some opportunities to create more wind energy in this state.
So a bunch of things just ran through my head. At least they want to get on the table here before we let you get to the conference. One is, there's a lot of controversy around wind energy. I mean, as you know, from both sides, environmentalists who oppose it and the rest. But what's your thought, idea, about what role wind plays? In other words, what percentage of American energy needs can come from wind from your perspective? It won't be 100%, that's clear. And that's because you have a lot to have a lot of real estate, put up a lot of turbines, whether
sure.
it's the Atlantic Ocean, Pacific Ocean, or across the plains, wherever those things may be. What part can it really play, do you think, long term?
A tremendous part. For example, it is estimated that in the Atlantic region, off the coast, as many as 65,000 megawatts of wind could be generated.
Which means what?
Well, in Iowa, we're at 4,000, which is 20% of our power. So I believe that Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, if they make a commitment to this over the next 10 years, they could produce maybe 5% of their power or more. It just depends on how much capacity they can build. In our case, we started small. In fact, we started in Iowa back in 1983. We were one of the first states to pass legislatively a renewable portfolio standard. It was 1%. That was our first, that's where we set the bar. And we built on that from, early 80s until today. I'm now continuing to advocate for more renewables in Iowa across the country. We think we can get that number to 25 in Iowa, maybe 30. And there's small wind opportunities. Most of these farms in Iowa are large, what we call utility class windmills. They're 1 megawatt or larger. And they cost a lot of money, $1 million or more per turbine. And that's been great, and we can build more of those large farms. But what's next, and the same could be true here in Maryland and other parts of the country, small wind has enormous potential. Small wind is really anything, the way I define it, is 100 megawatts or less. 100 kilowatts or less. So small units that could help offset utility costs for farmers or small commercial, more rural industry. So I guess my point is, in answer to your question, our country, the United States of America, if we commit to it as a nation, if Maryland makes a commitment, between wind, solar, biomass, there's no doubt in my mind that they could generate 10, 15, 20% or more of their power from renewable sources. Hmm. But it takes a real focus and a commitment. Mm-hmm. You need that public policy alignment between the opportunities and the policies to allow you to move forward, and that's what we've done in Iowa.
So in terms of wind, I mean, there are two things that, again, that come up sometimes. Mm-hmm. One is transmission.
Yes.
And so right now you have in Maryland, let's say, this argument over MAP. You know about MAP?
Yes.
So this for our listeners, I mean, it would be this energy transmission system going from Western Maryland all across the Eastern Shore. And the argument against it is because it relies on the dirtiest of coal. And so somebody argued the other side to me today who supports MAP.
Right.
I was talking to him. I said, yeah, that's true. He said, but you have to think long term. if we want to get rid of coal, then we've got to figure out how we can get the wind transmission from the east, from the coast, to tie into this.
Exactly.
And we can't get anything moving. So that can be the way you take to get the electricity out. So just throwing that out there to say those are real issues. I mean, our grid and our transmission system in America is literally antiquated.
Absolutely.
So that's got to be invested in. And then the question of what you tie into, because the argument is against coal, but the other argument is how do we get all this new wind tied into that system out? So that to me is one of the critical central issues of how we make this work.
Well, and that's another advantage, an opportunity, I should say, of building wind farms. You need to build the transmission to move that power from the farm to the consumer.
In this case, from the ocean.
Absolutely. And we can do that. But we have to do it. I couldn't agree more with the concerns raised. We have to do it in a responsible way that shows that we're aware of real environmental issues. But look, we've had that problem in the United States for generations. You can imagine the debate and the discussion when President Eisenhower said that he's going to build this highway system, this network. I mean, now, I think most of us would agree that that was probably been a good thing for the United States of America, despite real environmental impact, despite legitimate concerns that were raised for the decades during the time when we built that network. I really do not believe that this transmission opportunity and challenge is any different. It's just a new century and a new challenge. We can do it. We have to do it. Again, it's what's the alternative? You have up to 65,000 megawatts of wind blowing every day off the coast of Maryland. Or certainly the eastern
seaboard.
Seaboard.
Middle North Atlantic.
Right. So the question is how can we capture that and turn it into a clean alternative to some of the conventional options that are not necessarily at the top of our list either? And I think we can do it. And I think we can find that balance. For example, we're not talking about putting these windmills up a mile off the shore. We're talking about 12 miles out, and we will work with the Department of the Interior and other agencies that are responsible for making sure that those environmental considerations are considered. I believe that President Obama is committed to that. I know that Secretary Salazar is. They're not just going to let these farms be sited anywhere without having that thorough discussion, not unlike that process that needs to take place and has taken place for hundreds of years when you're talking about siting coal plants or nuclear plants. I mean, it's no different, but it's new. And that's one reason I'm out here today. I want to be a part of that conversation. I want these concerns to be raised. The legislators, the lawmakers, the policymakers, from the governor down to the local level, they all have to be willing to have this healthy conversation. But at the end of the day, I really believe that the opportunities far outweigh some of those challenges and those concerns that have been raised.
Just a couple more things. And as I think about this and look at the issues surrounding wind, I mean, in almost any other renewable energy you can think of, especially solar, that a lot of the component parts come from rare earth minerals. What we call – they're actually not so rare, but we call them rare earth minerals, right? And right now they're in China. And they're putting a clamp on and raising the price of those things because they're revamping the industry so they can control more. That's part of the that economic war going on. And we're discovering more in places in Africa. We're discovering more in Afghanistan and perhaps all through old Soviet Asia and many other places. So, I mean, this becomes a component part too, because you've got to figure out how you get the material that you need to even build solar panels or the blades and whatever else goes into creating the turbines.
Yeah, but a lot of the majority of those component parts can be and are being built in America. For example, we're making those fiberglass blades in Newton, Iowa today. We don't import anything to build those turbines in the United States. That's you've really brought me to another point here that I feel very strongly about. I think one of the only ways for our country to really get back on track economically is to start building things again. We've led the world in innovation, in entrepreneurship, in making things and designing products. That's been our bread and butter. And unfortunately, too many of those good manufacturing jobs have been lost. I've seen firsthand in Iowa the opportunities that making new renewable energy products allows for those families working in that factory in Newton today making blades, or those hardworking men and women working at Trinity making towers. What's the alternative? What else are we going to make? What other manufacturing jobs are going to be created in the United States? I think renewable energy, whether it's solar panels or blades or turbines or wind towers or the small component parts that need to be made and manufactured, that's going to stimulate tremendous economic growth. And we can do the same thing with the transmission pipeline. We don't get our the transmission lines from outside of the United States. We can make the lines in America, and it can create tremendous economic opportunity. So I'm very concerned about how do we really get out of this tough economic time, and I've seen in Iowa. Look. We've had some challenges out there,
yeah.
But let me tell you, with our focus on renewable energy and with the investments that we've made and the fact that we're now a net exporter of energy, we have the sixth lowest unemployment rate in the country at 6.2%. We were recognized as being the third best run state in the country. We're still providing more preschool for our children and more health care for our kids. We're still committed to excellence in education. So, because we have some resources, we're one of the fastest growing economies in the country. Yeah, I'm not saying it hasn't been tough, and we haven't had some challenges. But relatively speaking, because of our bio-based economy, Iowa and many Midwestern states are leading the way now. We've also focused on research and development around renewable energy. So we've become what I've called the Silicon Prairie of the Midwest. We're bringing a lot of those entrepreneurs and those dreamers to Iowa because they know we're committed to securing our energy future. They know that if you want to put a small wind turbine up, you can do it in Iowa. You might not be able to do it in Wisconsin or some other state for whatever reason, but in Iowa, we're embracing those opportunities. And so, you know, I think other states can do the same in different areas. It might, again, be solar or biomass or wind or a combination of all three. But the my point is we got to start doing it, not only for Maryland's sake, but for our country's future.
So one final thing. I there's a lot of also discussion about how we do this, I mean, how we pay for it. And so and one of the arguments going to take place here in Maryland, it will place – should be taking place in Washington, don't hear it is enough out of Washington.
Sure.
Is the role the government has to play in terms of building and stimulating this new part of the economy, much like Eisenhower did, as you mentioned, with the highways, or it happened when we built the railroads that attached the east to west. None of those things happened without the people's money.
Sure.
that's all those things grew.
Right.
So what is – talk a bit about that.
Well, first of all, I think it really starts with vision and leadership. I think Governor O'Malley is providing that on this issue for sure. I mean, he has been a proponent of renewable energy. He understands the opportunities. And so President Eisenhower had the vision to tell the people that this is an opportunity. And so I'm encouraged that a lot of that has been done. Now we need to have the discussion, the debate. Look, in Iowa, our ratepayers have benefited. Our utility cost as a result of our commitment to renewable energy and wind energy has benefited or resulted in Iowa becoming a net exporter of power. So we have more of it because we're now generating 20% from wind in Iowa. And our ratepayers have had some of the smallest increases in the nation because we've got power. They've got power. But it's up to policy leaders like Governor O'Malley to make sure that his constituents and those ratepayers benefit from this investment in renewable energy. And I'm confident that he will do that. And that's certainly what I did as governor. I was absolutely committed to fighting for those hardworking folks across our state that maybe didn't have a wind farm in their backyard, but as you say, they were part of the investment that the state made, and I think they've come out as a result way ahead because of it.
We've been here with Chet Culver, former governor of Iowa, here for the Maryland Clean Energy Summit 2011. Good to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555.